Outrocast.
When you finish 10,000 Volts, which hit number one in Sweden, it's got 20 vinyl variants, high charting in a lot of countries, another successful record for you.
It was number one here on iTunes and Amazon for a few days.
So you knew outright, hey, this is a hit and a great album?
Halfway through the process, you know, the first five songs we recorded together, they were all great. And, you know, Steve said to me, I promise you, if you let me co-produce this record with you and do all the songs, I promise you we're going to have a hit record. And I looked at him and I said, okay, let's fucking do it.
Now, I know Steve, I interviewed him for my latest book. Always a nice, smiley, pleasant guy. Surprisingly not dark for a songwriter and a producer. How did you and Steve Brown first meet?
Well, I've met Steve a couple of times over the years, but just in a casual situation. What really made it all happen was my fiance, Laura Cove, she was friends with Steve, closer than I was. And, you know, she was aware of his abilities and she really was pushing me to give him a call and get together with him at least on one song and see how it turned out. And I'm so happy I listened to her because first song we collaborated on was Walking on the Moon.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve had this song pre-recorded, and one line in the chorus was Walking on the Moon, but it wasn't the last line. I said, listen, let me rewrite all the lyrics and maybe add a bridge and stuff and do a guitar solo, bada bing, bada boom. We're going to have a great song. And that's what happened.
That seems to be a common thread in your career. The last time I had the pleasure of interviewing you and Bronx Boy.
When was that?
3 years ago or so. We were talking about
Spaceman?
Yes, for the Spaceman record. And you were talking about how the lyrics, I like green tea, somehow became Bronx Boy. And then if we go way back into stuff, we know that Into the Void, that was another song. So it seems like
that was originally Shaking Sharpshooter.
Right. So you have a good history in editing. In other words, you hear a good idea, but then you kind of turn it from good to great or good to excellent.
We had just going back to what you said about Into the Void, we had recorded the basic track of that with Peter Criss on drums. And that was the only song Peter played on the record. And I think it was the only song I played on. You know, Paul and Gene were control freaks and they were using Tommy Thayer and other musicians.
Sure.
You know, be that as it may, after recording the basic track, Gene said the lyrics don't fit the record. You know, because I'm talking about a cowboy, you know. And so I said, Gene, give me 30 minutes. I went up into the loft and rewrote all the lyrics. He said, why don't you do something like about space, like Into the Void or something? And then all of a sudden that clicked in my head. And I rewrote all the lyrics in 30 minutes because I write lyrics relatively fast, or faster than most people I've worked with. And he said, these are great. Let's go out and sing it. And it made it on the record. But if that wouldn't have happened, I wouldn't even have had a song on that record, Psycho Circus.
And Into the Void holds up. Take the compliment. There's no but. It holds up all these years later. So this new record, are you doing any of the songs live besides the title track when we see you live?
Well, right now, live, we're performing 10,000 Volts. And we're planning on working in Cherry Medicine. And, you know, things are just going onwards and upwards, you know. I think right now, since I've been a solo artist, I'm more popular than I've ever been. A part of that has to do with the fact that not only is it a great record, but the record company hired a social media specialist, and he opened up all my social media apps and got me on TikTok and Instagram. And, you know, I've always been on Facebook, but, you know, I really, you know, I'm not the kind of guy that hangs out all day going on fucking, you know, apps, because I don't have the time. And it really doesn't interest me what other people think half the time. So,
sure.
But, well, you know.
It's interesting to me how you were an early adopter of computers. You had that computer endorsement in the 80s. Then you kind of dipped out. Then you became
the Zenith computers.
Yeah. So you kind of went in and out and back into computers in your life.
Well, do you remember the video that was on the left and right side of the stage when we toured doing the Psycho Circus tour?
Sure.
It's 3D.
Yeah.
We had some 3D stuff happening, but remember the morphs of the four of us morphing from one makeup into the next?
Yeah, you did that?
Yeah, I created that.
Wow. So
the next day, Gene went out and bought me $15,000 worth of computer equipment. He goes, Ace, you know what you're doing. Keep doing it.
So Rudy Sarzo is not the only animator in Hard Rock. There's also you.
Oh, I've done tons of animations. Much more complicated than that morph.
Wow. Well, a couple of speed round questions, and then I'll let you go, because let's face it, the whole world wants to talk to Ace today. And these come from diehard fans of yours, some of whom very known musicians. And the first one comes from Norman Craker. He says, thank you for the years, many years of inspiration. What is your favorite solo, or the one you're most proud of in Kiss that's not including one of the songs you wrote?
I love the solo I did in Shock Me and Strange Ways. Everybody loves the solo in the one on The Elder.
Mm-hmm.
What was that song I wrote with Bob Ezrin?
That one I don't know, but the Elder is
a crazy solo with bongos on it and stuff. But, you know, if my favorite solo that I did on The Elder is the slow solo I did with a delay on what was that song Gene wrote?
A World Without Heroes. I don't know that much about The Elder. Sorry.
Yeah, there was a slow song that Gene wrote, and I did this really cool slow melodic solo with an Echoplex, and I listened to it today and I go, that's fucking brilliant.
Well, related to all that, from the band Blue October, the lead guitar player Steve Schiltz, he had a compliment and a question. He said, your vibrato when you play guitar is very distinctive, slower, and also more voice than most lead guitars. Did you focus on that when you were learning lead guitar, or is that just
You know, getting a good vibrato is something that you develop over the years. You just don't stop playing guitar and have a great vibrato. You know, I can go fast, I can go slow, instead of pushing the string up, I can vibrato down. And I have, you know, four or five different vibratos that I, you know, use depending upon what kind of solo I'm playing. And I can even vibrato with my pinky. I don't know how I do it, but it happens.
Wow. Kevin Baldus from the band Lit heard rumors that there's going to be another Kiss cruise and that you were on it. Is that something you can deny?
I would deny that, absolutely.
I
didn't have a lot of fun on the first one I did, and I can't see me I mean, if they paid me $250,000, I'd probably do it, but you know.
At least you're honest. Adam Bush, the actor and musician, wanted to know, where do you keep your Grammy? Where do you keep your Grammy? Some people use it as a toilet paper.
I don't have a Grammy.
I thought I did.
I have some type of award given to me by the Grammy people, but it's not a Grammy. It's like a recognition. And I was doing an interview, I forget with who, and he said, do you have a Grammy? And I said, I'm not sure. I think I might. And I called up my girlfriend at the time, Rachel Gordon, and she goes, she's looking at all my awards in the house, and she goes, yeah, there's something here from the Grammy people. But it wasn't a Grammy. It was some type of, I don't know.
Wow. And the last question before I let you go, you're forever associated with Van Halen because of the early days of Van Halen and Gene and all that. But yeah. Were you ever in the room much with David Lee Roth? Because I only hear stories about Eddie and you.
I mean, I knew David. We were friends. To be totally honest with you, me and Eddie really didn't do much together, you know? But, you know, people say I stole my tapping from Eddie. But to be totally honest, before Van Halen became famous, you know, when I was doing my guitar solo for Alive, and I used to tap with a guitar pick, Eddie Van Halen was down in the pit watching me, you know. But I mean, he took it to a whole nother level. May he rest in peace. I couldn't even begin to try to play some of the solos he's come up with.
Well, Ace, thank you for the decades of great art. Looking forward to seeing.
That's it.
Yeah, hey, the world wants to speak with you today. Let's be mindful of your time here. And I'm looking forward to that show that you have coming up at the Palladium in a couple of weeks there. So thank you for being here.
It's the Sony Theater.
Sony, Palladium, it's all the same, right?
Oh, it is?
No, you're right, and I'm wrong.
Capacity there.
You're right. I screwed that one up, but we'll put the correct copy in the article.
Day's going good. Day's going really good. It's nice to be able to get a talk about this film and to have this film be released.
Great cast in Prey. How did you wind up on this particular project? Because you're past the point of Cattle Call auditions. I'm assuming it was a producer went, hey, Emil's the right person for this.
Well, so I had actually worked with the writer-director, Mukunda, on The Immaculate Room. So, you know, this was him emailing me the script and being like, hey, check this out. What do you think? And reading it and just thinking it was really well written and different and an interesting role to play. And then he said Ryan was attached. And I was like really happy about that because Ryan and I have known each other for years, but we've never worked together and we always wanted to. And he's such a good guy and he's such a sweet, open-hearted guy. He was perfect for the role. And, you know, we had a really good time making the film, even though we were freezing because we were shooting in Valencia in the winter and it was supposed to be like South Africa, Kalahari Desert in the summer. But so we were really cold and psychologically that can take a toll. And as far as, you know, Ryan had really the hardest job on set because he's dealing with a character that not only has he lost someone that he loves,
mm-hmm.
but also his faith. And, you know, he's a Christian missionary. Everything in his whole life is about dedication to God. So to have that kind of taken away from him, you know, the part took a toll for sure. Sometimes I would just be like the cheerleader on set trying to like improve everybody's mood and stuff. Cause there's such a, when there's such a tragic role, it's very hard to just shake that off, you know?
How did you warm up? Sorry to rudely interrupt here. A lot of heat lamps, a lot of blankets, all the above?
Heat lamps and blankets. I don't know. I think we had like a jacket. I think the jacket was the main savior there.
Yeah, a lot of your roles involve you being outdoors and are suffering. But it's great to hear that it was lighthearted in this one, that it was a nice cast and crew. And it's kind of the exact opposite of a movie of yours I randomly stumbled upon, An Evening with Beverly Luft Lynn.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I wanted to ask you about the one for a minute, because I've never seen much said about that movie. Did you know that it was that weird while you were filming it, or was it all made weird in the editing room?
Oh, yeah, we knew it was totally weird. Because Jim Hosking, you know, he had made a bunch of shorts, and he made a movie called The Greasy Strangler, which was like a crazy movie. So as soon as I watched that, I was like, oh, wow, this is going to be super out there. You know, Jim, you know, really encouraged me to kind of get into physical comedy of it all and really kind of add in a certain slapstick kind of out there element of like the nightmare oppressive husband, almost like a, you know, distilled version of that. And I certainly loved working with Aubrey Plaza and Jermaine Clement. They were both so good. Just great actors, and just everybody involved in that film was fun. We shot that in Eureka, California, like Northern California.
Very not strange. England. I thought that was shot in England.
Oh no! It's in Eureka. Yeah, it's a strange flick.
So that's in Eureka. Then this one is in Valencia. Prey, we're talking about right here. So I'm learning that California has a lot of parts of it that could be Europe or Africa or other continents in general.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit disillusioning when people learn of all the movies they love and where those movies were actually shot. You have to be a little careful as an audience member when you do too much digging into the films you love, because you might find out that like it wasn't anywhere near where you thought it was, and it's, yeah, you're just like, oh my gosh, I'm questioning everything, you know. And
yeah,
that's just the reality of the way that you know, these things are made.
Yeah, Rocky Balboa fighting Drago in British Columbia doesn't quite have the ring to it like Russia does. But
yeah,
back to you. You know, that was a rare comedic role for you, but you also are talented as a musician. What's coming up on the musical end, if anything?
Right now, you know, I haven't been songwriting for a little while now. Maybe down the line, you know, we'll make some more songs, me and the Frenchman. But yeah, I haven't really been writing any songs lately. I've been working on some screenplays. You know, just working on a couple different drafts of some things that I found interesting. So that's sort of been my sort of writing outlet per se. But yeah, no, I haven't. It's weird. Songwriting is a thing where I just never wanted to force it. But then, you know, it's also been kind of a while since I've had any kind of desire to write down a song. And I, you know, at one point I tried to make myself like 9 months ago, I was like, all right, I'm going to write a song. It's been too long. And like, that was the wrong reason to write a song. And it really showed. And it's just, it has to be, I think the best way to do it is you have to really just be inspired to express yourself or something.
Well, the rate that you've been going the past few years, it looks like it's 3 to 5 movies a year. But if you're also writing screenplays, I think your creative Jones is out there. Maybe you don't need another thing like songwriting.
Yeah, you could be right too.
Yeah, you don't want to be one of those people that has to do an album a year just so that their All Music Guide listing looks like they did an album a year.
Yeah. No. And honestly, like making an album a year, it's a lot more work than making like a couple movies a year. Like albums take a long, especially the way that the Frenchman and I made the records and he produced them, is, you know, there's so many layers to the sound and it takes so long to craft each song.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's a lot of work. Especially with the electronic way that we made it. You know, if we were just playing, if I was just banging on the banjo and singing into a mic, maybe we could make an album a year, right? But not in the kind of hyper electronic space that we've been operating in.
Not when you're making good art. Well, the last question I have before I let you go, Prey is a new movie to us. It's an old movie to you. Do you know where we're going to see you next, or where we're allowed to know that we're going to see you next?
I have a couple of films in the can that are going to be released. There's a film called Degenerate, which is kind of a poker movie that I'm really proud of. And a film called Bao, Artist at War, which is like a kind of a Holocaust movie and that I'm really proud of. And let me try to think what else. Those two.
A lot of one name movies for you between those and Dig and Walden, in a good way.
Yeah.
And the last question before I let you go, you know, related to the musical end, what's the last concert that you went to?
Oh, gosh, it was. I went to Steven Tyler's charity benefit, and he sang a song. So technically Aerosmith.
Technically Aerosmith. He is at least 40% of Aerosmith right there. That makes sense. So thank you for your many years of great art, whether it's on the screen, behind the screen, on the record and all that, and looking forward to the next project. But in the meantime, congrats on Prey.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure to be speaking with all three of you today. We'll throw it to Matt first and go two-parter. How are you, and how does it feel to be answering the same questions over and over and over again?
The main thing is, what posture am I going to be sitting in for this particular? No, it's the greatest. Talking about this, I can't believe the last time we did this. By the way, we had our they sent us kits and we were doing them in our house. We're at a real live press junket here, and there's just so much excitement about this season. Not just from us, we're just very, very excited. It's been a long time coming for it to come out. Did you get to watch it?
Yes. I had the pleasure of being on the season one junket, and here we are again. Yay. I haven't been blacklisted yet.
We should talk to somebody about
that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, to keep the compliments coming here, Apple TV made sure that you guys got the best possible chairs. Usually the chair situation on late night talk shows, it makes everyone look terrible. Not the three of you.
Thank you. So, they're very comfortable.
Johnny's got it in his rider.
I do. I said it has to be a comfortable chair.
Yeah, we benefit.
Yes.
Well, Hallie, has the chair situation been this good in your 30 plus years in the Henson ranks?
Oh, well, let me tell you something about Apple TV. Transitioning from the chair to this, they're incredible partners. You know, they made our dreams come true. You know, you ask about the questions that we've been asked, you know, and I think we love being here together, the three of us, because we love the project so much. We all have so much passion for it. It's like a hope and dream project coming true, and they made our dreams come true. So, you know, and then made our dreams come true, and they said, go make the show, and they've been incredible partners. So this season, we're excited. You've seen it. We have, like, the most amazing musical stars, and Adam Lambert, Aespa K-Pop, Adriana DeBose. So we're so excited for them to be here. And yes, I'm so grateful to this chair, but really to this amazing photos behind us of the Fraggles. Johnny and I are going to steal them after this junket and put them up in our offices.
That's right.
Wow. So much to unpack right there. But you brought up a good point about the special guest stars.
Yeah.
And I would have to assume, correct me if I'm wrong here, that the booking the great stars is the easy part because everyone's a fan of the Fraggles.
Fraggle Rock is a talent magnet. It's a very, very beloved franchise. I think it's the rock. You know, we attract the punk and
it's
hook
the cool
rock.
Kid
yeah,
show.
It's the cool kid show for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always it's nice to hear from the stars when they're like, you know, a lot of rock stars actually will tell you over the years before even we were working on this version of Fraggle Rock, you would run into people and, you know, they'd say, oh my God, Fraggle Rock is what made me want to be a musician. You know, when you hear like the biggest stars in rock say that, that's a pretty impactful thing. So hopefully this version of the show is influencing the next generation of incredible musicians as well.
Well, John, you really stand out in being voice talent, multiple characters, and then also behind the scenes with production. So do you give yourself notes?
I do, actually. You know, it's funny. I directed an episode this year, and you know, I would shoot as Gobo, set up a shot, and then shoot it, and then I would literally like stand there and watch playback and be like, yeah, Gobo's going too far over. Gobo's got to come more. Like, you know, I would literally forget that I was doing that, so I could take that note mentally. I don't need to say it out loud. But yeah, I did a series years ago where I was on cameras myself, and I had to learn to kind of, you know, detach from that, the performer side of it, to the producer side of it, so I can switch hats pretty quickly. But there are times where moments like that happen where I'm like, wait, that's me. So I should just direct myself right now.
Well, follow up to that, was the voiceover part of your career an accident? Or was that what you wanted to do all along?
Well, it really started, you know, I grew up in a showbiz family. When I was a kid, you know, my mother's an actress, my father was a musical director, so I was always around theater. I was always backstage watching or in the audience watching, so I always knew performance was something I wanted to do. I didn't discover that I liked doing voices and liked doing characters until I found Fraggle Rock at 7 years old. It was the first thing I saw that had puppets in it that I said, that's what I want to do. And I think what I loved about the show was that it was this fantasy world where, you know, one performer, for example, Jerry Nelson, who I've gotten to follow in the footsteps of as Gobo, played, you know, seven different characters, you know, and it clicked one day. I was like, oh my gosh, the same guy who does Gobo does the architect and does Marjorie the Trash Heap and does, you know, and that just made me say, that's something I want to do. So as a puppeteer, you have to have a bunch of different voices that you can pull from. And that really came from watching Fraggle Rock when I was a kid. And now I get to use it in this version of Fraggle Rock. So it's this beautiful full circle thing.
That's a good point. Some of the greatest voiceover and character actors for cartoons always did multiple voices. Mel Blanc.
Yes.
Dave Coulier, et cetera. So you are keeping up that tradition, John.
Thank you.
Matt is kind of lonely here. And
wait, you said Mel Blanc and Dave Coulier. Is that where you went?
Yeah.
Yeah. And famously had a puppet in Full House, right?
That's right.
Woodchuck guy, yeah.
That's right.
What? It was made out of wood. Yeah. Just like
one of our finest Canadians, right? Which is where we shot Fraggle Rock. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, hi, welcome to Dave Coulier chat.
Oh, we could talk Coulier for hours here, but we're not going to. We'll save it for the season 3 junkies.
Yes, right.
But yes.
Matt, I love your credits outside of the Fraggles, you know, Community, New Girl, etc. Any idea what credit of yours it was that got you hooked into this project?
Oh, I could tell you, yeah. So Alex Cuthbertson and I, my writing partner, who's not with us today, he's doing fine though. He wanted to make sure that people know he's not dead. We have had and continue to, hopefully will continue to have a great career, but it was actually on New Girl. We were done with New Girl, and our good friend and one of the showrunners on New Girl, Dave Finkel, said out of the blue, just like, hey, one of my best friends is looking for somebody to work on Fraggle Rock, Hallie Stanford, you want to meet him? Like, yeah, of course we do. So Dave Finkel on New Girl hooked us up with Hallie, and the rest is history. Outro cast.